Welcome to the Maris Review. I'm Maris Kreisman, and I am so thrilled to be joined today by Sam Irby. Samantha Irby is a humorist and essayist and the author of three previous essay collections, but her latest is called Quietly Hostile. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Maris. This is the dream of my life, to look at your face first thing in the morning. You are so cute. I can't handle it.
Glasses.
I wore pink for you. I was like, I'm going to be sunny for my girl. I'm going to be like cheerful.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I love that this new collection opens with what I would kind of think of as like your particular manifesto.
Yes. Yes. It's not like inventing anything, but one day in a pinch, I am a over-apologizer. I am a please like me kind of person. And so my knee-jerk reaction when someone has been like critical of something innocuous that I enjoy or just mentioned or whatever, I am always the person who's like, you know, when some sophisticate, you know, frowns on whatever I like, I'm a person who's like, oh, yeah, I know that's dumb, or, oh, sorry, I know I have lowbrow to, and like, why am I apologizing for things I didn't make that don't hurt anyone? So I just started saying when that happens, and it happens so often, like once you start looking for people trying to shame you or force an apology out of you, you see it like constantly, is just to say, I like it. Like, whatever it is, I will defend a toothpaste brand to the death if someone criticizes me. You know what I mean? It's just like, I can't do it anymore. I can't apologize. You know what I mean? Like, if you hate Mr. Colgate, that can't be my problem. and it works. It really does, like, take people's like knees out as soon as they're like waiting for you to like try to get their approval by defending yourself. And when you don't give it, it's so awkward, but it's so wonderful.
It is. And like, I really miss people earnestly liking things. Like, I think like 10 or 15 years ago on social media, it was a lot of people just liking things.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. I have, for whatever like flaws in my personality, I'm always like a cheerful consumer of things, right? Or maybe like undereducated, so that's why I'm cheerful. But like, I'll watch any movie, and at the end, I'll just be like, "Oh yeah, that was good." I mean, I watched it. Couldn't have been that bad if I sat through the whole thing. But this thing now, where everyone's like, you know, the movie starts and people are like trying to like get their snarky takes ready. And I'm like, I can't do it. Is just so, I think that is a thing that is just like, it wearies my soul to just like watch something with the goal of shitting on it. I don't want to do that.
I love that. And speaking of which, anyone who loves your work knows that you are a huge Dave Matthews fan. And so I want to talk about your new list in this collection of most romantic songs and how that allows you to talk about some of the other things you value.
Yeah. I think is appropriate. People like think I'm doing a bit, you know? I promise you, I still have all of his CDs. I want him to write about Dave, like just so that it's out in public, right? So that, you know, the Bible of Samantha Irby, you know, chapter whatever, is we love Dave Matthews in this house. And like, I'm not a reporter, right? So like figuring out how to write about him without doing any research, that's really, I mean, I'm going to admit it to you, then so the world will know, that is what puts me off of doing a thing, is like, if I have to research, like, no. How can I make this about my feelings and about the facts of this person's life? And so I was just like, I was making myself a little, like, you know, romantic Dave Matthews playlist. And then I was like, oh, I must write about this. And like, I don't know, I think I'm going to convert people. Like, I mean, I'm delusional, but I really do think I'm going to convert some folks.
Listen, I may have turned on Apple Music and run through a couple.
Yes. See? And were you... Okay, I'm going to frame this so I get a positive answer no matter what. Were you horrified by any of the songs?
No, I was back in high school.
Yeah. But, I mean, the way what you listen to in high school, like, imprints, it's like it becomes like part of your DNA or something, right? Where it's just like, it's like putting on a familiar jacket where you're like, oh my God, I forgot how good this feels. And like, I get it. Child me who hated listening to my parents' old music. I get it now. I get it. I like put the Breeders on in the car the other day, and the teens were like, can you put on Kendrick? And I was like, oh, okay.
What's a game where no one wins? The waiting game. When it comes to hiring, don't wait for great talent to find you. Find them first with Indeed. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. We streamline hiring with powerful tools that find you matched candidates. With Instant Match, over 80% of employers get quality candidates whose resume on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job, according to Indeed data. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed's hiring platform matches you with quality candidates instantly. Even better, Indeed's the only job site where you only pay for applications that meet your must-have requirements. Indeed is an unbelievably powerful hiring platform, delivering 4 times more hires than all the other job sites combined, according to Talent Nest 2019. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/Maris. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/Maris. Indeed.com/Maris. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I love that you even have an essay in this book about not playing your music for the teens.
There is nothing. Okay. See, maybe this is where I like it came from, right? Because teens, my stepchildren are 15 and 17, right? Like, they know everything. Everything about everything. You can't teach them anything, which is like, okay, great, whatever. But they're also so, like, they're so judgmental, but in the most, like, seamless way. You know how, like, people our age will, like, give you a look up and down, and you're like, oh, okay, I know what's coming. The kids will just pass through and be like, oh, that shirt. It's like, you're walking, and you're like, wait, what about the shirt? Good shirt, bad shirt. You know what I mean? So I am always, and I wish, you know, that serenity that you're supposed to get at 40, which now everyone says you actually get at 50, which I'm sure I'll get to 50.
The goalpost will always move.
Yeah. I'll get to 50 and be like, oh, I got to up my Zoloft. This is somehow not getting better. It just, like, I wish I didn't want them to think I was cool. Interesting. Or I wish I could be cavalier about the thoughts of, like, the children and their friends. And, like, I don't go out of my way to make them think I'm cool, but I do, like, if they don't react positively enough to something I'm doing, I'm like, oh, they don't, okay. Nothing I do will impress
them. They love your tattoos.
They do love those. They are unimpressed by the books. They don't care. Hollywood, like, I'm not working on a show they like. So they're like, that's what you're doing in the office with your door closed. We don't care. It's tough. It's tough. And I wish I didn't care, but I do.
That's so tough. And I do think, like, my favorite essay, I would say, in this collection is very much about what you're doing in that room with the door closed. For years, you were trying to make this TV show about your first essay collection. And in this essay, you kind of do the work of writing that episode into an essay.
Yes. Okay. Let's talk about the nuts and bolts of that.
Yeah.
When we got the final no, let's put it that way. We'd been for different networks, different executives. When we finally got the final no, I was like, okay, I'm done with this. I have been put through the meat grinder. Now I'm going to go be a hot dog or whatever it is that happens to ground meat. I'm going to be in some chili. Let's go. I was like, so it doesn't feel all for naught. I'm going to put the script in the book so people can, like, see at least what we were trying to do. Then I told my agent this plan and he was like, aha, Viacom owns that script for like more years. And he was like, we cannot back you in a lawsuit from Viacom. And I was like, oh, yes, I would never ask you to. So then I figured out a way to I wanted to show what was in the show. But then since I had to figure out another way to do it, I was like, okay, at the same time, I'm going to talk about the behind the scenes stuff. Because it's all stuff you can't. Oh, I don't know if you can't say it, but it's, like, frowned upon for you to say to, like, people who are not, like, in your writer's room or whatever. It's like you're not supposed to tell real people that, like, it's constant rejection and it's all a fallacy and only, like, three people get to make exactly what they want to make and the rest of us have to figure out how to try to fit our round peg into a square hole. Whatever that phrase is. And then the added bonus for me was that, like, I wanted to, people just make so many assumptions about careers and industries and whatever. And I just wanted to be like, hey, you don't have to feel bad for me, but this is what it was like. It was 7 years. In the essay, I list all the things that have happened between first, like, taking the book out to see if anyone would buy it and when things ended, and, like, counting the number of birthdays. Like, when you think about a thing in terms of, like, okay, this kid was 5 when I started and is 12 now that I'm finished. I can't believe I devoted such a big chunk of my life to this thing that is now gonna be nothing. So I feel really good that I was able to salvage the thing and, like, paint a picture. So maybe you can imagine what it would have looked like, but also it answers people's questions about like, where's your show? What are you doing? Right. Why didn't they want it? And I don't even get, I mean, Hollywood is so opaque that like, it doesn't even hurt my feelings anymore. Because I used to, like, I would feel like, oh, is it me? Is it because the book is about me and the show would be about me? It's money. It's, we have three fat shows and so we don't want to make your fat show. You know what I mean? It's all these things that are out of my control that I should not take personally. And it felt good to be like, okay, everyone, this is what I tried to do. It's not working. Don't ask me about it ever again. But like, you know, that getting the like, when's your show going to air? It's like, oh, never o'clock on every day.
And what we were talking about before is like, you have written for some really wonderful shows, big time. Of course, you had your episode of Shrill, which was a delight. And then you were just on the Sex and the City reboot. And yet, we were just talking before I pressed record about the WGA strike that just started.
Mm-hmm. Union and
how much it fits in with your entire, with the experiences that you have documented in this book.
Yes. I mean, I was reading some of the, because, you know, I don't see like other people's contracts and I definitely do not read my own. I'm just like, where's the DocuSign? Whatever. Just pay me, please. But like reading people's stories about how little they're making. And I'm lucky enough that like I have the books. I live in Michigan. I don't have to worry about paying $3,000 for a studio apartment in Los Angeles, but I also get like residual checks that are like for $40 or $9 or what, and I'm like, okay, this is like a laugh for me because I have another like source of income, but like real people are getting these same checks and trying to like make a life out of it, and that is bonkers to me. Particularly, I saw an infographic. First of all, I love an infographic because I don't know how to read. So I saw an infographic of all of the like top CEOs in Hollywood and their like how they're making like $200 million a year. I'm like, okay, you could shave some of that off and like pay 22-year-olds who are like doing the heavy lifting in your writer's rooms that you'll never meet but are like funny and making your show great. It really is distressing. And it also, but I'm glad it's happening for many reasons, but I do love that like other people outside of the industry are paying attention, because people hear TV or movie and they think millionaire, and it's like, not the person at the keyboard. The millionaire is on screen saying the lines that someone else wrote. The person who wrote it is like eating ramen.
Seems unfair. Yeah, and then of course, another aspect of your writing on Sex and the City reboot is, of course, that you got a lot of death threats.
I knew people were nightmares before, but so all the other TV I've worked on has been small, not really indie, but you know, they have an indie feel in that like 12 people watch them and we're allowed to be super creative, and nobody ever contacted me about nothing. And then this show, I was a Sex and the City fan from jump, like when I was 19, like watching it. I've seen every episode dozens of times. And like, I could not believe they reached out to me. I couldn't believe I then got hired. And it's, I was like on cloud nine. And then the first two things happened that clued me in that this is going to be a wild ride. First, was they're like, they did a like meet the new writers kind of thing. And they were like, here's our new brown faces. And it was like everyone honed in on us and were like, these three are the ones messing up the show, which is like, I wish next book I'll explain like the hierarchy of who does what and how anyone in my position, it's like, you're lucky if you see some original jokes I wrote. I'm not making the big
character decisions.
So I loved it, but I was not prepared for that level of spotlight. And then on Twitter, I saw this woman I followed. I've since like nuked my Twitter. This woman I followed.
I
would come back for you. I do always try to like read your Instagram to see if you post your tweets, because you do have really good tweets and recs. But a lot of other people post your tweets. Did you know that? This is like a diversion, but like a lot of like Bookstagram people, I'm always seeing Maris tweets and their stories. But I saw this woman on Twitter. So the first cast photo came out, and Miranda was wearing white pants. And this very smart woman was like, Miranda wouldn't wear those pants. She has a child. And I was in my head, I'm like, you're going to see her child like getting his dick sucked or whatever. Like, she's an adult. She can wear white pants. And I just, that to me, I was like, okay, nobody has ever talked about anything I've worked on. And this is going to be a thing everybody talks about. And I felt like protective and a little defensive. So I was like, I have to stop reading this stuff now. But people found me. Oh my God. I wrote the episode where Miranda gets fingered by Che, a non-binary comic. And some guy like commented on my Instagram that I was destroying the American family. And I was like, me?
It's you.
Like that. Wow. I should be richer than this if that's possible. Like, come, what are you talking about? Why am I like wearing a shirt from Target? Winning families. And so like I didn't, it just is like insane to work. And I don't even know how the actors do it. I am but a lowly internet person. Like, just to have that many eyeballs like trained on you and what you made and nitpicking it and analyzing it. And I'm the kind of person, this is why I don't read book reviews either. I'm the kind of person who, I don't get mad. I get like, I gotta tell them what I was trying to do. Because if they just heard me explain it, then they'll like it. You know what I mean? I'm like, I want to convict. And you can't, that is a terrible way to be. I wish I had a callus over my heart when it came to people's, I don't even read reviews of like friends, my books, right? Friends. Books, my friends. And I'm like, oh no, but she didn't, you're misinterpreting, you know what I mean? So it was wild to just hear everyone's misinformed thoughts and their threats against me, which honestly, like, kind of made me laugh. Like, no one is coming to rural me and to find me. But it just was so overwhelming. And I was like, this is my first big show. And I don't know if I could do another big show because. But I did work on season two. So you have more American family breaking up coming from me.
I love that. And of course, in New York City, we still say Cynthia Nixon is our governor.
Yep, she is my personal governor. She's so nice. That's another thing. I mean, these women are like icons, but they're also like regular people. Like, Cynthia has texted me before, and I'm like, get off my phone. Are you kidding? You were going to be the governor. Don't ask me if I've seen this play. You know what I mean? I just am like, girl, you should be talking to the president. It's not me, but they're all like so nice. But their audience, some of them are rabid freaks.
Incredible. I think another big theme in this collection, as well as a few others, is we know that you want to be a crowd pleaser. You yes. want to not to cause a fuss. Mm-hmm. And so you finally had an experience that really took that to the most extreme level that I could imagine when you were telling jokes in the ER. Tell me about that.
It was one of those, it was the kind of thing that, like, afterward, I was like, I have to reevaluate how I move through the world because I'm, like, not a serious person. And that can only last for so long. So I went into anaphylactic shock, which is, in my case, I don't know how it is for most people. I didn't, like, faint or anything, but I just, like, my face looked like it had been stung by 1,000 bees, and I couldn't breathe, and I went to the ER and stood in line rather than running in and being like, please, please, help. I'm gonna die, help me. I patiently stood in line because I never want anyone to yell at me. I never want anyone to, like, you know, I never want to be in the way, like all that low self-esteem stuff. But even when my life was at stake, I was like trying my hardest to be unobtrusive. And that is not a good way to live. But I also, I mean, I have a sense of humor about like everything. And it's really annoying. I know to some people, it's like to be an adult, be serious. But I went into joke overload. And I couldn't breathe. Like, they were trying to figure out whether or not to intubate me. And I'm trying to, like, crack the blowjob jokes. And the doctor was like, you gotta chill. Like, I just was like, I want these people to like me so that they'll save my life. And it's like, listen, they're gonna do it. They're jamming in the EpiPen. They're jamming in the steroids. They're doing it. You don't have to do anything. Like the next day, because they make you stay for, I think, 5 hours, because once the epinephrine wears off, your whatever you reacted to could come back. Mm. So I had to sit there for 5 hours. And I did a lot of thinking about, like, why am I like this? What am I hoping to accomplish by being like this? And I know it's just like, I just want people to be like, oh, I love her. She's the best. Even if it was gonna kill me to do so. Timmy, I mean,
I would prefer to compliment you on your hilarious book. And then, of course, another big Sam Irby trademark. Oh, you know what I'm gonna say too. You are normalizing talking about pooping.
Maris, that's my dream. I just want poop talk to be casual. It's okay. Like, obviously, I feel a lot of shame because I'm always, like, pushing back on things that make you feel shameful. Like, I'm trying, or not shameful, ashamed. I'm trying to just talk about stuff and remove whatever stigma. And pooping, it is so crazy because everyone, literally everyone does it. And yet, I'm sure you've been in situations too where it's like someone pooped in a bathroom and stunk up the party or whatever it was. And we all act like we would never. And it's like, that could always be you. That, yet you do that. You just didn't have to do that at this party. Or in the middle of this meeting and everybody's like waiting for you to come back. But like, you do it too. And so I'm just going to keep talking about it. My one goal in working on it just like that was to get Carrie to poop. I got close. We got her on the toilet peeing, and we got a bonus. We got her puking in season one. So I was satisfied. But like, it's funny, you know, I saw last night a Sky Rizzy commercial, like for Crohn's disease. And I was like, it shows a guy holding his stomach a little bit. And they're like, here's some medicine that'll fix you. And it's like, I want to see him with all his clothes off, sweating on the toilet while like an alien moves through his body, and then give him the Sky Rizzy and show me that it cured it. If we could be honest about that, I feel like so many people, it would like lift a burden you didn't even know you had off so many people. Like if you
Tim,
didn't
have you seen this week's Somebody Somewhere?
No, but I got three texts about it, and I have not caught it. I haven't started season two yet, so I'm about to start because I heard there's some of my favorite stuff happening.
Diarrhea, I would say.
I mean, great. It's so great. Just anyone saying the word diarrhea, I'm like, yep, talk about it. We have it. Everyone has. Yeah, I'm a poop evangelist. What can I say?
Thank you for your work.
That's what I'm going to get my Nobel Prize for.
Sam, before we go, you know, yes. I know how much you read, and I know how much you used to write about books. Mm-hmm.
I got to get back into that.
No. Yeah. Talk about things that don't pay well.
No, for real.
So tell me what you're looking forward to reading.
Just started Chain Gang All Stars. I would follow Nana into a volcano. He's like a genius. I also, on a recommendation of my local bookseller, got Blue Hour. Have you read that? It's like a short novel about a couple that loses a baby. So I was like, this isn't really a light reading, but I'll take it because you told me to. And then I am just starting the new Stephen Graham Jones. I love horror. I love him. I mean, he just, the only good Indians blew my hair back. Oh my God. So now I'm reading. I just finished My Heart is a Chainsaw, and I'm going to read Fear the Reaper.
And that's a sequel, yeah?
Yes. Okay. It's like a three-book series. That dude is incredible. He, like, has the kind of talent. I mean, and Nana, too, where you just are, like, reading, and you're like, man, I cannot believe that someone's brain came up with this. So I'm super excited.
Well, Sam, I can't believe your brain came up with it. So thank you very much, and quietly hostile.
You are the best. I'll do anything for you, anywhere, anytime.
Thank you for listening to the Maris Review, and check the show notes for the books we discussed on here today. And please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.